Okay, today I'm near Leeds with Simon Walton, the owner of Proform Racing. Thanks for agreeing to talk to us today, Simon.
That's okay.
Now, I've done a bit of research on you, and the first thing I noticed was that you left school with no qualifications. Now, did the school fail you, or were you a blatant non-trier?
Well, I'd like to say it's a bit of both, but it's not really. The years I was at school was when all the strikes was on. The teacher strikes, so there was a lot of disruption. And there was also the school that was at, there was a lot of work going on, and there was a lot of temporary classrooms, so you had to move around, and it was a good excuse not to go to the classes. But in the main, it was me just not going. We used to, it's probably when I first got into gambling, because we used to play 10p's against the wall, and it turned into quids against the wall eventually. And we also used to play cards on a lunchtime, and I was quite good at dealing from the bottom, so I used to be the dealer. My friend was put the money up, and well, not a lot of money, 10p's and stuff. And we used to win enough to go to the amusements after, so we'd sign in the afternoon and go and just leave school, walk out, and go to the amusements, lose the money, do the same again the next day. So sometimes I stayed all day, but most of the time didn't stay at school all day.
Right, so you saw the light when you left.
Yeah, so it got to the exams, and then it wouldn't have mattered whether I revised or not. There was no way I'd learnt enough, so I got E's in everything. I think the only one I got anything in was I did home economics because my mum wanted me to be a chef, and I'm quite reasonable at cooking now, so which is good. But that's the only thing that came out of it, really.
So people of a certain age will remember the YTS scheme.
Yeah,
and that's what got you going. Can you tell us a bit about why you?
Well, that was, my dad was always into computers, and we had a ZX Spectrum at home. And when I went to see the careers officer at school, and obviously I'd failed everything, and he's like, so what are you going to do? Have you got any hobbies? And I said, I like computers. And we used to get this little magazine every week where you could see programs in it and type the programs into the computer, and it would create a little game or something. And he said, can you do some programming? And I was like, well, yeah, well, you know, I sort of said, yeah, I can do programming. Can you do machine code? And I'd never heard of it. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. And he says, oh, well, we'll try you at this place. And it was a YTS for half computers programming, half electronics. And I went on that, and you suddenly got, you know, you got, I think it was £30 a week, wasn't it, or something like that you got. And my mum got a tenner, and the other 20 went in the amusements. And I couldn't do it. Because academically I'd sort of failed, it took ages, especially the math side of it. But all of a sudden it clicked, and the programming clicked, and the electronics didn't. I just used to burn my fingers on the electronics all the time, doing the soldering. But the programming, it was like, I think I've got a really logical mind, and that's sort of what you need. So I managed to learn the maths, do the programming, and I just, very rapidly, it was all of a sudden, I sort of went from not being able to do it to being like right at the top of the people there, and got a placement really quickly. And so it just sort of worked out for me, and I failed the college because I failed the electronics bit of it, blew a computer at one time, didn't tell anybody because we were at college, and we were doing a traffic light circuit board thing. You had to program the program in, you had to program a circuit board to do LEDs in a traffic light sequence. And I could do the programming bit, and then you had to solder the board and stuff, and then plug it into the BBC Micro, and then do it. And when I plugged it in, it popped the computer, popped the board, did set on fire, but it was like smouldering. But I was the first one who'd gone in to do it, so I just unplugged it all and went back in, and just never said a word. But so I failed electronics. I got a referral on that because I failed the electronics side of it. But the placement went really well.
So how did horse racing come into it?
That's where it started. So I got a placement at a software company. That creates a development house that wrote programs for all sorts of things, accounting and all sorts of stuff. And the first thing, the guy, to learn a new, because it was a new language I had to learn, and he got me to initially write a football league. So you type in all the football scores and it'd generate a league with the points and everything else. And I mean, I know that seems fairly simple, but from a programming point of view, to learn a new language, it takes you a little while to get around it. So I did that. And then the second thing he got me to do, because he was into betting, was to write something to predict horse racing winners. And he gave me a set of criteria of what you had to ask, and then what the points got depending on the answers. And then it just totaled it up. And then you do that for each horse in the race, get a total and the top one. So you're basically creating a rating based on somebody else's idea of what points should be allocated to certain attributes, course and distance, winners, that sort of thing. And we did that. I wrote that. We got it working. We did it on four races. It spit four horses out. All of the office put 50p in or whatever, and they all won. A Yankee won, and we all won 20-odd quid each or something like that. So that was like, ooh, this is like quite good. So that's how I got into sort of being a bit quite interested in horse racing and programming something around horse racing. But then there was a long gap then between anything else happening, because it was more on the programming career. I ended up on a placement from there at a steel company that makes steel fabrications for warehouses and things like that. And it just ended up that I was by myself there due to circumstances with the software house I was at, and they employed me. And then one of the directors there was into horse racing as well, and I was still dabbling about trying to refine this program and add more to it in sort of spare time. And the director let me sort of do that because he was interested in it. So it sort of progressed a little bit, but it was probably still 8, 10, 12 years down the line before I really did anything else.
When you got the four winners up when you first go, didn't that make you think you found the golden goose and
absolutely with it? Yeah, it did. Yeah, so, well, I was still betting then. So then I'd go every Saturday with my mate to the bookies. We were always in awe of his dad. His dad used to come in because sometime in the middle of the afternoon, he'd walk in with his big Rottweiler, Zaxxon it were called, with his hat on. He'd come in, walk up to the papers, just look at them, look at the screens. Next race off in 5 minutes, he'd write out £50 favourite, stick it on. And then some days he'd win like 300-400 quid. It might be like a 5-1 the field handicap, and he's got the favourite. And then, but win or lose, he'd do it and walk out. And everybody, when he'd come in, it'd go quiet. Because 50 quid, it were like 30 years ago, and it was someone coming in and putting 50 quid on, and everybody else were putting 10p on and 20p and 50p. And so we used to stay in all afternoon and bet us 10p, 50p, and we had some good wins. It was when Desert Orchid and things like that, and Panto Prince were running, that sort of time. So I would do, every Saturday, that's what we do, go in the bookies.
So when did you start taking it really seriously with, you know, putting more science into it? Obviously, you had your computer program. Did you start reading form and did you get inspired by anybody for that?
Yeah, so it was around, I'd moved on then to a different company, and I was an IT manager at that point. So I was still doing programming. I was still programming horse racing stuff, and it progressed a little bit further. And then the inspiration was Nick Mordyn's book, which was Mordyn on Time. And it was the one where he's got all of his calculations and his standard times in the back. And he used to do it on card files. And it was like, and he even said in the book, it takes ages because he's got to go through them all and find the horses for the race and then mark them all back up and work it on that one. And it was like, I could just, you know, if I had the data, I could write a program to do that. So I just got the data. I sourced it from internet sites because the internet was starting to take off at that point, especially from the racing side of it. So I got the data, sort of created a program to automatically create the speed figures based on his model using his standard times initially at the back of the book, and then wrote a program around it that just sort of graphed them. So it just sort of graphed a horse's career in speed ratings and then put all of them against each other so you could see all these lines on a graph. And it just stood out. You could see patterns standing out of when the form correlated with the speed figure and it had their perfect conditions. And I started betting on them a little bit, and some in the office were betting on them, but we weren't putting a lot on. And I just started giving it away free on the internet, on forums and stuff. And it just sort of took off. There was like 400-500 people. It was just all free. I was just doing it free in my spare time. I was doing some betting off the back of them myself. I remember I did some really good winters back in on the all weather, like course and distance winners, next time up, so that when they were coming out straight away, just follow up ones, and they were sort of still undervalued at that point, and it didn't work now. It didn't work at all, but I had one winter where it was just, and I think I got a bit lucky because I was rolling up the percentages. So I started with like, say, I don't know, 100 quid bank or something, and I were doing like 20 quid bets, and every time it went up, I were up in the percentage of bet, and I think I did like 3 months of betting and turned the 100 quid into 10 grand or something. But the season after it didn't work.
Why do you think that? I mean, virtually every successful punter I speak to has got Nick Morden's book, or one of them.
Yeah.
Why do you think Nick Morden was so revolutionary with the way, you know, there's been lots of books written about backing horses, but everybody seems to reference him as the changing point in the way they...
I'm not sure, really. I mean, maybe it's something to do with the ratings giving a... Reading form is such a difficult thing to try and get all of the angles and read the form. But if you can create something, create one figure, then and that's where, you know, a lot of websites have ratings and stuff, then it's easier then to use them figures to quickly narrow a field or find a bet. And I'm not sure if whether that's why it was Nick Morden. I think it was possibly a lot of, you know, he's quite eccentric and the way they're written and stuff. And but for me, it was more about the ratings and the fact that I could do something that would take him hours in seconds.
Yeah. So when did Proform as a business come into being, and how did that? When did you decide to take the leap into trying to make money out of it as a business?
Right. Well, so I had 400 or 500 people using it. I just got divorced and met Deborah, who's my wife now, and she sort of pushed me down it. She worked at the same place, and there was making redundancies at that point. And I wasn't one of the people who was going to be made redundant. But the contracts we had were so good that Deborah said, why don't you... And basically, I was going to get a year's salary, because I'd been there 8 years and it was a month for every year and it was tax-free. And I'd basically get a year's salary. And I had all these customers, and we sort of worked out, you know, if I try and charge for it, possibly I could make money out of the subscriptions and make it into a business. And because Deborah was working full time, she just said, just go for it. So I volunteered for the redundancy, and they accepted it. They nearly unaccepted it because I was quite happy that I'd been made redundant. And obviously there was a lot of other people in the office that were not happy that I'd been made redundant. And I remember them getting me back in one day and saying, you need to sort of dumb this down a bit and look a bit unhappy, because everybody else is really pissed off and you're really happy you're leaving. So I think at the time, it was a lot of money. I got £28,000 tax-free as a redundancy package. And I just set up and turned it into subscriptions rather than free. And it was really cheap. I think it was 20 quid a month or something. And I didn't have to break into redundancy the first year. I managed to, because you don't need earners, no. You don't, when you're not going into an office and having to get your lunch and get your travelling and everything else, You only need to earn half as much. It's your serious expenses eat a lot into your salary. So the first year was great. We didn't really break into redundancy. It earned enough for us to carry on. And then I just started evolving the software, because I had programmed it. I just kept programming it and just progressed it from there, really.
All right, Simon. So you've set up Proform. You've still got a nice few quid with your redundancy money sat in the bank. You're doing all right. Were you profiting from your ratings and Proform yourself as a punter?
Right, so I'd have to say overall, no. I was betting, but I was betting more as a recreational punter, having some wins, having some losses, probably overall losing a little bit. The main reason for me for that really was I was concentrating on, especially in an afternoon, because you're working on doing declarations for the next day, it's always in an afternoon. And at that time, when I was creating the data, it was taking a long time. I wouldn't say it was a full-time job even then, but it was still 5 hours in an afternoon creating data for the next day. And that's when racing's on. So you haven't got time to sit down and concentrate on trying to find bets. So I just didn't try to do that. And to be honest, what I did most of it, I lived right next to the golf course. So I just played golf in the morning. I used to play golf in the morning, have a little kip, do 5 hours work in the afternoon, make the tea for when Deborah, because she was working full time, make the tea for when Deborah gets home. And then I just do that every day. I mean, some weeks I played 9 times golf. I used to play on a night as well. So I just played a lot of golf, did the declarations, improved the software, and just tried to build up subscriptions. So I didn't really bet that much, I wouldn't say, for the first 10 years of Proform's life.
You say you're a recreational punter. Would you say that your customers, they can all be professional punters, but does it suit recreational punters, Proform, if or is it too complicated for a novice?
I think the software is complicated. Because it's a full database, and if you're not particularly computer savvy, it's quite a big learning curve. There's a lot in there. It's evolved so much that there's a lot of different aspects to it. So what I introduced more recently in the last 5 or 6 years was the like the online race guides and the bet finder, which is like a bet, lay and trade finder. And that them two are more for recreational punters or people who don't have a lot of time, because all of the good statistics are still in them, but it just allows you to get to it quicker. So I would say the people using this, the people subscribing to the full packages and using the software, the majority of them are, I would say, on a slightly different level to recreational punters. And there's a lot of other people subscribe, like journalists and stuff. There's a lot of tipsters subscribe. So tipsters use it to help find systems, and then they'll have tipping services. And that's fine. I'm a data provider, so that's what it's for. It's for people to use it in whatever way they see fit.
You talk about systems, and like a friend of mine I know is very keen on finding new systems on using your using Proform. How long do you think the lifespan of a system is? Because I assume that after a while they don't work anymore.
Yeah, a lot of it depends how many people are using it. So we have like a little group, a WhatsApp group, as part of the membership, and not all of the members in it, because some people don't want to chat about things. Some people want to keep things close to the chest, but the ones that do, we sort of share systems, and I review them every year. So we might be like 60 or 70 systems that we share. And when you review them at the end of the year, you can see when they're starting to tail off. And it does depend on what the system is. If it's a trainer-based system or something like that, or a jockey-based system, then there's certain cycles that are going to happen with trainers as they sort of come to the end of their careers, or they don't get as many good horses 1 year, or they move into different spheres. So they can be very fluid. Rating systems are a little bit more consistent until there's a lot of people backing them, and then I imagine somehow the bookmakers have got hold of them, and then they may be altering the prices slightly based on if a lot of people are backing them. So you've just got to keep evolving and keep looking at them and checking them and seeing if there's a pattern to why they've failed.
So would your top rated horses move the market?
Well, you'd like to think so. I'd like to think they were. But I'm not sure. I don't know. It's difficult to tell, because a lot of the top rated horses are going to be somewhere near the front of the market anyway. More steam than drift, that's for sure, because we can check that in the software. But again, I just think a lot of it's to do with eventually everybody will find them types of horses in one way or another, not necessarily because it's from my ratings, just because they have got a better chance. I think my ratings are predicting that they've got a better chance than the market says they should have. But I think eventually everybody finds that, so the prices just naturally move. So I'm not sure I'm moving the market. I don't think I've got enough members to move the market.
So can a punter, there's a lot of lazy punters out there, myself included, can a punter make a living just backing the top rated horses?
Yeah. If you can keep the accounts. So me and a friend of mine back the top rated, and we do it just to show members that it can be done. And we do £10 on every horse in every race in the UK and Ireland the night before, using a bookmaker that's offering bog. If it becomes a non-runner, we don't replace it, because in theory, second rated would be then the top rated, but we don't do that. We're just lazy punters. It takes 20 minutes on a night, we put all the bets on, and if you can keep the accounts, and at that level, it's fairly straightforward to keep them for quite a long time, then you can make somewhere between, I think we've made about 450 points in 14 months, something like that. So you could, and the beginning of the previous year was really tricky with the ground, and we lost a bit. So I think you can, but you've got to keep the accounts. So you've got to try and churn the accounts. But you can also still do it in the morning, breakfast prices which is that's 7:30 in the morning, or at morning prices at 10:30. But it's just you'll make less profit because the prices of non-runners have come out and the prices have moved a bit. But you can still do it. You can definitely do it if you can keep the accounts.
Okay, well, people watching this are going to be screaming, hang on a minute, if you're showing any sort of profit, you can't keep an account. So how do you get around that?
Right, so We've managed to keep an account that's won £3,000 or £4,000 with one bookmaker for 14 months by just betting a small amount. And you bet, and I think part of it's because, and it's not the same for everybody, because you see different stories with my members that you can have two or three bets. I mean, I remember having two or three bets with a bookmaker and they all lost in the close of the account. So you've hit some sort of trap that, or you've backed something that's moved. So sometimes you can just lose them really quickly. I don't really want to go in exactly what we do when you lose accounts. We do chat about that with members and stuff. But there's, if you can get more accounts in somebody else's name, there is ways of making sure that they won't find out that it's you doing the betting. It's not, it's fairly simple, but we don't want to tell all the bookmakers how to do it.
So is what you've just described, is that basically the level of your betting these days, or do you get more involved?
I get a little bit more involved in the winter, where I bet with someone else, and that's at a little bit of an higher level, and I have to manage my accounts really well to do that. But from a personal betting point of view, I do the betting with my friend that we do at the night before to show that you can bet on the top rated, and then I have a friend and a colleague who works with me, and we do some betting on some slightly less selections. They're all generally based on ratings, and we do them the night before. And again, it's because we supply them to members. Members who subscribe, we give them the selections the night before from them systems. They don't even have to actually download the software. We just give them the bets, and we put them on as well to show that you can make a profit. And we just got to manage the accounts. We've got five or six bookmakers' accounts, and with different bookmakers. And we just do that to show members that you can make a profit to small stakes, enough to cover subscriptions and make a little bit more, and then you can use the software to find your own angles.
So do you provide information to the enemy if the bookmakers wanted to, if a bookmaker wanted to subscribe, would you sell him the subscription?
If he came direct, I wouldn't sell him the subscription. I know of one person who works for a bookmaker that's subscribing. I think there's probably bookmakers subscribing, but because you can create Gmail accounts and Hotmail email address accounts, you wouldn't know. They're not going to use their own name to subscribe. So I imagine they are bookmakers subscribing from trading rooms. If they came direct, I'd probably say no. But I don't think there's anything you can do about it.
Now, people might be surprised that you're sort of the industry leader with the sort of service you provide, Proform, but you're pretty much a one-man band. Is it all you still doing the work at the moment?
No, there's two of us now, but it has been all me. Well, I did have somebody a few years ago as well, for a couple of years. I think it was 3 years. But up to that point, the first 15 years, it was just me doing everything. And I've now got another chap who I know really well because we play golf together and stuff. He's at the same golf club. And he's been into racing all of his life, and he's IT as well. So I think it's a really good marriage to get the work done. If you know horse racing and you're computer savvy, it really helps me in my business. And he's come on board. He's been working for me just over a year now, and he's doing really good. And he's taken over the afternoon work. So I do the morning work. I do all the results, and I create the speed figures, and I create the pace ratings. And then in the afternoon, he does all the production for the 24-hour decks and the 40-hour decks. And we've got it pretty much nailed. We've tidied it up. It's a lot quicker now. We get the data in from the official suppliers, so it's mainly okay. We have to do a bit of checking on it. There's sometimes a few issues. But we've got it narrowed down to, I do about an hour and a half in the morning, and then Robert does somewhere between 2 and 4 hours in an afternoon, depending whether it's in the flat or the winter or the summer, depending on how many meetings they are. So we've got it pretty much nailed down. Yeah, it's two people's enough.
Well, we're sat here now. Your twin five-year-olds are at school.
Yeah.
But when they came along, that must have knocked it bandy a bit for a while.
Yeah, it did, especially working at home. I think if I'd have had an office to go to somewhere, then, you know, I could have been out of the door at 7, back at 7, And it'd have been great, but Deborah needed so much help. When, you know, we're a bit older parents than most, and you just don't have as much energy. So it was very difficult to start with, especially the first 2 years. I used to trade the NFL a bit, and I remember having a screaming baby in my hand while I'm trying to trade an NFL match, and I lost quite a lot of money on it because there's one screaming baby here and Deborah's got another one over here, and it was like, right, that's it, let's just stop trying to trade, because I used to do a bit of trading and stuff. So I would say the first 2 years was very difficult working at home. Didn't get much programming done.
Now, we're sat here in Yorkshire, and there's another well-established ratings form, organisation time form. How would your ratings compare to them, or do you not compare them at all? I mean, what's the difference?
Well, all their ratings are on the same scale as official ratings, so you can compare like for like pounds and lengths and stuff. The two main ratings that I have in mind, my speed figures are raw, unadjusted speed figures. There's no weight accounted for them. You can add weight into them, and some members do. And then the other main rating that we create is like a prediction rating. So whereas a time form rating or a racing post rating would carry on through its career, and you would see the rating move with its progress, the ratings we create are basically a prediction rating for that day. And when that day is finished, they're worthless. So we're just trying to predict that one race, and then they're gone. You can look back at all the past ones. I think the main difference, though, regardless of them, when you're betting on them, is that the two mainstream suppliers, Timeform and Racing Post, their ratings are just saturated. They're saturated everywhere. Everybody's seeing them all of the time. The bookmakers have got them on their websites. They wouldn't have them on the websites if people were making money off the back of them. It's just there's no value in them. Bookmakers won't have my ratings on the website. I've asked to get my stuff on some bookmakers' websites, and I've actually been knocked back by a major bookmaker because they don't want to be associated with my data because it will make the punters profitable. Some punters, not everybody, some punters are just going to lose. It's just in their nature. But they knocked me back because they don't want them on there.
That would have been not that great a business move, really, would it, if you'd actually done that? No,
probably not, no. So I do have, there is a slimmed down version of some of the Proform stuff on the BetDAC website, but it doesn't use the main two ratings that members get. It uses two slightly variations of them that are still profitable, especially the main rating on the BetDAC one. It is still profitable at evening price BOG and at morning price BOG, if you can keep the accounts, but it's not as profitable as the ones that members get.
Now, is there any lateral thinking involved with your ratings, or is it all purely factual based?
So, it's a slightly complicated process. The main rating is created from seven other ratings. The seven other ratings have got all the usual suspects in, like trainer form and jockey form course and horse form and all sorts of things like that. They've all got various stuff in. But then the final rating's created using a method called neighbourhood analysis that finds the best matches for all the ratings. So there's a little bit of lateral thinking there to come up with the final figure. And that one is definitely better than the rest of the ratings. So that by doing that, it's created quite a good figure. But there's nothing, it uses my speed figures in them. But other than that, it's using everything that's, you know, if you had the time and the programming skills, it's all readily available to be able to try and create your own ratings.
Yeah. So if somebody's looking at, you know, they're thinking about dipping a toe in and subscribing, what would you suggest a new person using Proform should concentrate on initially?
Right. So if you've still got bookmakers accounts, then you're going to better straight off the bat use some of the stuff we already provide. I think when you purchase and get the full package and get the software now, it installs like seven systems. It's the seven systems that I think are the best ones. And it might turn out to be 10 or 15 selections a day. And if you've got bookmakers accounts and put them on, then you'll cover your subscriptions easily. Might not in the first, you might have a bad run in the first month. But subscriptions are 2 months long. And the reason I make subscriptions, it's 8 weeks. The reason the minimum subscription is 8 weeks is you need at least 8 weeks to learn it. What I find with most people who come and try it is they don't even install it for the first 6 weeks. And then when they do install it, it's so massively daunting that then the subscription's passed, feel like they've wasted the money. So I would say if you're going to subscribe, you've got to have a time period to commit to learn it. There's a lot, I mean, there's so, I've done about 300 training videos. That it's just all there. It's all there on the website, even if you're not a subscriber. And just people just need to give it time to do it. But you can straight out of the box, you can back some systems. And assuming you don't start with a losing month, then you're going to cover your subs. I would say 80% of people though pay for it and don't really try it, and then don't resubscribe.
Now I've got a friend who's a subscriber, and he's asked me to ask this question. Can you explain what PRB is and why is it so important? It's something unique to your system, your profile.
Yeah, it's unique in mine at the moment. So this is something that James Willoughby has used on Racing TV, and he was widely known that he uses Proform as well. And we've discussed quite a lot of mathematical things in the past. And PRB is the percentage of rivals beaten. So you're basically looking at, when you look at an horse and a race it's running, if an horse has had 10 races and won two of them, or say won five of them, then it's got a 50% strike rate. What percentage of rivals beaten does, it allows you to look at each race and see how many runners it beat in that race, and then you can basically create a percentage of how many it's beaten in each race, and then take an average of them percentages, and you end up then, instead of a strike rate, you've got a percentage of rivals beaten over them 10 races, and it's a much better predictor than strike rate is. So if you're looking at a race and you've got all these horses that have got career strike rates of 10, 12, 13, 14, 15%, and then you've got the percentage rival beatens as well alongside them, the higher figures on the PRBs are a much better predictor than the strike rates are. And we mathematically can examine that and see that they are. So I think it just gives you a little bit more of an edge than just looking at strike rates, because you can predict the future a bit better using PRB.
Okay, now obviously it's very sort of complicated formula you use. Could it be transferred to other sports? So could you sort of use it for greyhounds or football even?
Yeah, greyhounds are definitely fitting. The way I've written all the software and stuff is, if you can get it into the right format, then the software just sort of work around it. There's going to be some issues and changes, because in greyhounds, you've got all the time trials and things like that. But it definitely be able to do other jurisdictions, other codes of racing, Australian, South African, American. You could do all of that, and Proform would sort of fit around it once you've done all the initial work. A big barrier to entry is the cost of data. Cost of data for anything is expensive, whether that's football or anything. I think it worked really well for golf. I think the percentage of rival beatings could actually be a really good angle on golf, of how they've beaten other people in the field. It's just getting the data and then the time to actually being able to program it is the main problem. I suppose I could employ a massive team and then branch out to all of the countries in the world, but I'm trying to get a balance of earning money from subscriptions and having a family life. I mean, you've got 5-year-old twins. You want to spend as much time with them as you can, and not spend all of your time writing software.
I also understand, with the fruits of your labour, you've invested in bloodstock at some point, or you've had shares in horses.
Yeah. So that came about with Chris Dixon and his brother Martin, and Richard Oils, and they've used the software for quite a long time, and was buying an horse quite a few years ago and asked me if I want to be involved, and we created a partnership called the Rod and Pickle Partnership, and I think there was only five or six of us in, and the first horse we got was an horse called Miyako, and that got a few place races, and I think it only won for us. I can't remember how many times it won. I think it was just once. But the feeling of when that won, it was at Southwell, because we have him with Mick Appleby. And on the back of that, I ended up sponsoring Mick Appleby's stable, and I still do. And I actually now also sponsor Mickey Ammon's stable this year for the first time. But that was brilliant. The feeling of getting a winner when we're all there at the races was great. And so we progressed and got another horse, an ex-Gosden horse. Miyako had quite a lot of problems. He had bad backs and stuff. So we didn't make any money that we shared out with that horse. He was quite a low-grade horse. We sold him on. I think he went to Q8. And strangely enough, all of horses have ended up there that I've had. And then we got another one out of Gosden's yard that had a bad back. We got a win out of that. That one ended up in Q8. And then the best one we got one called Superstar, no R on the end, and he was just amazing. I think he had 7 wins and won 80,000 in prize money. And that was the last one that I was involved with Chris and stuff. I did miss a bit of a trick. They asked me if I wanted to get involved when they had, I can't remember what it was called now, I think it was 2 horses, Akam and the winner of the Silver Cambridgeshire a few years ago that they had. And I had the chance to get involved with them, and I just sort of thought, oh, I'll just stick out of ownership for a bit. And so I said no. And now they've had Big Country, Point Zero. I said I've been like sitting pretty as an owner, had some great days out, and I missed out on all of that. I'm still kicking myself for not doing that. I think they sold the Cambridgeshire winner to America for a lot of money. So I've missed a bit of a trick there. I have now got another one at Mickey Ammons with Andy Gibson via these Cheltenham Trail stuff. It's like a syndicate we're in. And he didn't run all last season because the ground was just never right for him, so we just put him away waiting for the, because it was such a dry winter ground in the jumps, we just never got him to run. But I've been really lucky. I think at the entire ownership of them 3 horses, I think it probably cost me over 7 years something like £4,000 or £5,000 in total. All of the prize money he won just kept going back into the training fees. And at the end, I think we got about, I got about 3,000 back, because it was when we sort of disbanded it. So I think I've been very lucky as an owner, really, in comparison to others. But okay. Yeah, it's good fun.
Now look, just looking at the ratings again, constantly evolving new ideas. You know, is that just something that comes naturally now? You keep looking for new angles?
Yeah. So like we've just added the PRB stuff in. I'm evolving the race guides a bit. I'm going to try and make them so it's a little bit more like a form book. I'm always trying to make it so it works for backers or for traders. So there's quite a lot of stuff in for traders in the software. I think in-play trading's really taking off even more now. So I'm trying to write things that will give people better data for in-play trading. And then I'm looking at sectionals, because now they're starting to become a bit more widespread and you can get the data. So I had the data last year, but I've not done anything with it yet. So I'm sort of possibly might introduce sectional timings for all weather races this coming winter. And then there's just so much more. It's 25% complete is the software. I've been doing it 20 years. I'm not sure I'll ever finish it, but I've got a list of development ideas of like 80, 90 different things. Some of them are going to make big differences to people, and some of them minor things. And I just, in the winter, I'll just do loads of programming and add more stuff in. So I just do that every winter. I try and enhance it and add something that's going to give people an edge. And that's what I've always done. I'm just trying to make it so you've got, it's good data that gives you an edge in betting that nobody else has got. And if you put the time in, you still need to put the time in. You can't just press a button. It's never going to be that. But if you put the time in and use the data, then there's people, you know, still making a lot of money out of it.
Now, you say, interestingly there, that nobody else has got. Do you ever regret not just sitting on this and keeping it totally to yourself and making a fortune anonymously?
Yeah, well, I think that's probably what I should have done right at the beginning. The problem at that point, because that was a time when I could have made a lot of money, I think, using the ratings. Although I've not developed the final rating at that point. That's only 10 years old, is that rating. So the first 10 years, it might have been difficult. But when I first developed that rating, I do remember somebody approaching actually, and they didn't want me to sell it. They wanted to buy that rating from me. And I said no. I'm not sure that would have been a good idea or not. But what I think when I first developed the rating, I should have just backed them while you could still get on to an extent. And I probably could have, for 5 years, made A, I think. But it was always about, the subscriptions had built up. It was always about subscribers, really, and providing data to them. I think I could have made a lot of money the first 5 years. I didn't. I went down the subscription route. And it sort of took me quite a long time to get to where I am. But I don't think I could do it. I don't think you could do it now. I don't want to chase my tail trying to find new accounts all the time.
Okay, Simon Walton, thank you very much.